This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 Joycast. In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited to make this Joycast possible. For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
Good evening and welcome to The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson, your summer host, sitting in for Dan Vo, who's having a well-deserved break. Thanks to Vito, Penelope and Bill for behind the scenes, Gary for the news, and to Jerry, who is providing outstanding program support. My special guest this week is Alex Budd, General Manager, Melbourne and Enterprises for Opera Australia. First up, though, is tonight's quirky track. It comes from an opera that some people don't seem to think is an opera, but it most definitely is. It's George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, a three-act opera based on a play by Dubose Heywood and his wife Dorothy. George Gershwin worked with his lyricist brother Ira and Dubose Heywood to create the work, which had its premiere at Boston's Colonial Theatre in September 1935. It ran for 124 performances at Broadway's Alvin Theatre. Sadly, Gershwin died at the age of 38, and it is only opera that he wrote. From George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, here is Sinead O'Connor with My Man's Gone Now. You're on The Fool and the Opera.
Journeying together to the promised land. But old man sorrow's marching all the way with me, telling me I'm old now since I lost my man.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that was Sinead O'Connor with My Man's Gone Now from the opera Porgy and Bess. That track comes from a CD called The Glory of Gershwin, featuring harmonica genius Larry Adler. It also includes tracks by Sting, Elvis Costello, John Bon Jovi, and Cher. Sinead Marie Bernadette O'Connor was born in December 1966 in Ireland. She rose to fame in the late 80s with her debut album, The Lion and the Cobra, and achieved worldwide success in 1990 with a cover version of Nothing Compares to You. She has regularly courted controversy with her views on religion, while maintaining a successful singing career. She's been married twice and has four children, each of whom has a different father. She's also had several relationships with women. She's spoken publicly about being diagnosed with bipolar disorder and attempting suicide on her 33rd birthday. She has plans to release a new album later this year. I'm Paul Williamson, and I'm here with my guest tonight, Alex Budd, General Manager Melbourne and Enterprises for Opera Australia. Alex, welcome to Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Paul.
And now, Alex, you are quite a young man. I haven't asked how old you are, but how did you land this great job of yours?
Thank you for the young compliment. I commenced at Opera Australia in 2000 with my first year, so this is my 11th year. And I started work here in Melbourne for Oz Opera as the tour manager of Oz Opera, and I was a very young man then, and I think apart from probably the oboe player in the orchestra about the youngest person in the touring party, and I was loading these 33 people onto a bus to take them around Australia to country towns performing Rigoletto.
Wow. Now, I don't think you grew up in Melbourne, did you? Where are you from?
I'm from a small country town south of Sydney. Some of the listeners might have heard of it. It's called Canberra.
Oh, yes. I think most listeners will have heard about Canberra.
Mm.
And so what did you do when you left school?
Well, I had a interest in music through school and also sort of in the technical workings of theatre. And I worked for a year at the theatre in Canberra as a lighting technician. And then started a Bachelor of Music at the School of Music in voice.
How did that go?
Look, it didn't finish. I got sidetracked partway through it with this small opera company that some colleagues and I were involved in setting up in Canberra called Stopra that still exists today. We put on a few series of chamber operas and had a lot of fun, but sadly it didn't leave a lot of time for history assignments at the course. And I had 3 years involved with Stopra, and then Sydney Dance Company were touring through the Canberra Theatre. I kept up my work at the theatre, and I became their head electrician and touring lighting designer for a number of years, which is what brought me to Sydney. And I lived there for a number of years working for Sydney Dance Company and touring the world with them. And I guess that's where I developed this sort of touring experience, and in turn ended up at Opera Australia through a connection I'd made with Stuart Maunder, who we'd had direct for Stopra in the days in Canberra. And when he started back at Opera Australia as artistic administrator, he introduced me to the woman that was running Oz Opera, and
Was that Lindy Hume?
Lindy Hume was artistic director. It was being administered by Sue Olden.
Okay, okay. And so how many years ago was that again?
That was 2000.
Right.
I moved down to Melbourne to tour manage Oz Opera, and I took Rigoletto out twice, and then a year of La Boheme, and then I had a year acting manager of Oz Opera when Anne Frankenberg took maternity leave for the first time. Then Opera Enterprises was developed in the company as a means of sort of leveraging off our existing activity and trying to create an additional income stream to fund, some of the cash negative things we do, and there's a lot of them in the opera world. And
so some of the lighter fare, the Gilbert and Sullivan, is that what
It was touring, yeah. So we've had some quite successful tours of the Pirates of Penzance, taking, it does a season in Melbourne and a season in Sydney, and then we've taken those shows to Canberra and Brisbane and Adelaide, and then the same with My Fair Lady in 2008 that toured up and down the eastern seaboard and also to New Zealand.
And that was very successful, wasn't it, My Fair Lady?
It was.
You had
production.
Several Henry Higginses that I can remember. There was Reg Livermore originated the role.
That's right.
And then it was taken over by
Richard E. Grant performed the role when we did a return season in Sydney after the Opera House season. So he did the role there. And then the New Zealand season, William McInnes took over the role.
And was Taryn Fiebig the Eliza for all of those incarnations?
She was. And we did about 190 performances all up, and she didn't miss one. Amazing.
That is quite incredible. Okay, now let's go to your first music choice. You've mentioned being involved with Rigoletto, and I think your first choice is something from Rigoletto, isn't it?
It is indeed. It's La Donna Mobile, the Duke's aria from Act 3 of Rigoletto. It was something that brought a lot of merriment in the Oz Opera tour days, because it was, it's this tune that's so popular that no matter whether, you're a beginner in opera or you'd seen a thousand operas, everybody knows the piece because it's in pasta commercials and things. There's a great story about when Verdi wrote it, how he had to keep it from the tenor until the day of the first performance, so it wasn't sort of pirated by people, and he didn't want to hear it sung in the street before it had been heard at the premiere, and it had the similar, a similar effect touring it.
And who is our tenor today?
Our tenor today is a little-known fellow, Roberto Alagna. yeah, one of the great tenors of the world at the moment.
Excellent. Okay, Roberto Alagna to perform La Donna Mobile from Verdi's Rigoletto. You're on The Fool and the Opera. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson. And that was a Roberto Alagna performing La Donna Mobile from Verdi's Rigoletto, the first choice of my guest today, Alex Budd, General Manager, Melbourne and Enterprises for Opera Australia. Now, Alex, you've told us a bit about how you got your start in this industry, but what does a typical day consist of for you when Opera Australia is here in Melbourne?
Well, it's very different when the company's in Melbourne to when it's not. The company has about 300 full-time employees and over 1,000 people that work for us in a given year on, you know, casually or on seasonal contracts. And so outside of season, there's only 10 of us in the Melbourne office that are the core Melbourne-based people, but that swells obviously to a couple of hundred in season. And I'm the senior management representative in Melbourne. So I guess when the company is in season in Melbourne, I sort of act a bit as a host of the company, you know, making sure the arrangements are set up for them to be in the office and the theatre. And then it can, you know, really depends on what's happening, whether we're, you know, meeting with industry colleagues or government or you know, doing some work around forward planning. It's, you know, often you don't know what the day is going to lead to. There's obviously some things that churn over, but it's very interestingly widely varied.
It sounds like a pretty busy job, and I know you do a bit of travelling up and down to Sydney, and you're also a father of two young children. It must be pretty tricky balancing all those responsibilities.
It is tricky. Adding family to the mix was always something that from day to day you just have to cope with, I think. But that brings a lot of joy, and it's a great release from the stresses of the day when you go home and a young 3.5-year-old just, you know, wants to tell you about something completely non-opera related. But he loves the opera too, actually. I brought him in to see one of our school's company productions, and he talked about it for months and months. It was really, really heartwarming. Our new audience of a few generations' time.
Now, you have just come back from Sydney, and I believe you saw the opening night of Tosca and the wonderful new American soprano Takesha Meshe-Kizart. Is that right?
I'll go with your pronunciation. Takesha is as far as I've got. Look, it was an amazing, riveting night at the theatre. It's this bold interpretation or new interpretation of the work by Christopher Alden, very different to the traditional production that the company's been doing for longer than I've been alive.
And but there was some booing of the design team, I believe, on opening night.
There was. It was, a little bit of booing, but I think what it showed was that the audience was so engaged with the production, and they loved the singing, you know, Takesha as part of it, but Rosario and Warwick Fife and the rest of the cast, you know, were equally well.
John Vegner as Scarpia.
Applauded, and John Vegner as Scarpia was superb. And there was, you know, yes, a little bit of booing for the design team, but a lot of clapping as well. And the audience at the party afterwards were certainly, you know, not, as Lyndon Terracini said in the press the next day, they weren't talking about what they were doing on the weekend. They were talking about the show, which was great. So really looking forward to having it in Melbourne, and Nicole Yule in the title role down here. And it's great. It really engages the audience, and, you know, we love people to be challenged by different productions and don't want people to keep coming back and seeing the same production time in, time out.
Now, you've just mentioned Lyndon Terracini, Opera Australia's relatively newly appointed artistic director. Is it fair to say that he's arrived with some very bold new ideas and will be shaking the company up a bit?
I think that's fair to say. I think there's a lot of change that's already started at the company too, following the very sad early passing of Richard Hickox. There's this process of new renewal, which includes a new artistic director, and that, you know, is naturally going to bring new ideas and innovation to the company. But our chair has been doing some work in the board. We've recently announced a new Melbourne board member, the Sotheby's director, Leslie Orway. So, yes, there's lots of new ideas from Lyndon which are being worked on. But, you know, across the company there's a process of renewal too.
So can you tell us about some of those new ideas?
Look, I think I can't talk specifically because it's really early days. We're having a management planning or two management planning days in a couple of weeks' time, where a lot of these are going to be thrashed out and fleshed out. These sort of ideas will start, you know, coming online in 2012 and beyond, which will be Lyndon's first official season. He's already keen to make some changes or to do some slightly different things in 2011, which will include, we hope, something different in Melbourne. But, you know, I'd hate to be making you promises. The sorts of things he talks about are, you know, things like extra concerts and of works that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily put on the stage in a fully fledged production, working with Indigenous artists and developing an Indigenous policy for the company. So really exciting things that are very new to the way we've operated in the past.
Let's go to your second music choice, Alex. What have you selected next?
This is a tiny chamber piece by Samuel Barber. I think it's called A Hand of Bridge. It's a bit like Tosca, or this new production of Tosca in a way, and to some extent the Streetcar that we performed in Melbourne in the recent spring season, in that it's opera without its big themes and grand ideas. It's this sort of dramatic opera where it's been pared down and stripped down to the essence of the story. And this Hand of Bridge is four people sitting around a bridge table. They're two couples, and they're playing playing the game, but they each have a turn in breaking into their own soliloquies and talking about what's really going on in their mind. So a very small chamber, black comedy-esque type work.
Very interesting. Okay, let's hear Samuel Barber's A Hand of Bridge. You're on The Fool and the Opera.
I could be as rich as Mr. Bridget the Bastard, even richer, rich as Morgan, if I were only rich
as the Aga Khan,
a Maharaja, a Rottweiler,
that hurt of peacock feathers.
I could be a king of diamonds, the Sultan of America.
You're on The Fool and the Opera on Melbourne's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9. I'm Paul Williamson, and that piece was called A Hand of Bridge, a chamber opera by the gay American composer Samuel Barber. And incidentally, Barber's life partner was the opera composer Giancarlo Menotti. That was the second selection by my guest today, Alex Budd, who is the General Manager, Melbourne and Enterprises for Opera Australia. That was an unusual piece, Alex.
It is an unusual piece. It was the next musical choice we've got coming up. Both of them were part of the first Stopra season we did in Canberra with Stuart Maunder. It was a quadruple bill. The first half was Il Combattimento di Tancredi and Clorinda that we're going to hear a little bit of soon. This piece by Barber that we've just heard. A piece by Hindemith called Hin und Zurück, or There and Back, which was a crazy 15-minute opera where he wrote 7.5 minutes of music and then basically inversed the score So the whole thing was then played backwards to make it 15 minutes long. And the action, which is like a this funny little sort of murder scene where someone gets shot at the, you know, the end of the first 7.5 minutes, then gets reversed and the guy comes back to life and, you know, tea goes back into the teapot and everything happens backwards. A bit like putting a film into a movie projector and running it backwards.
See, opera doesn't have to be boring, does it? It can be quite exciting.
Quite an exciting night. And then, so they were the three works in the first half, and then the second half was Ibert's Angélique, which Victorian Opera are doing this year. So I'm really looking forward to seeing another interpretation of that work.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, how many years ago are we talking about?
That year was 96.
Okay.
In Canberra. So 14 or 15 years. Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, this discussion leads on to my next discussion question, because how do you think we can go about attracting a younger audience to opera?
This question comes up a lot with the opera. There's this perception that the opera audience is old and it's getting older, and all of these people that like Puccini and Verdi are, you know, in their 50s and 60s, and in 10 years' time they'll be in their 60s and 70s, and then they'll all die and then no one will go to the opera again. And it's just not true. The average age of an opera goer is older than other art forms. But
do you know what the average age is?
I should, and I don't, so I won't pick something out of the air. But it's younger than you think. But, you know, it's an expensive art form to put on, and it's an expensive art form to go to a lot of the time. Or, you know, in the grand opera sense, OA works in most of its productions. But so, you know, you have this cycle of people that, you know, they once they get their kids through school and they find that they've finally got a little bit of money again, they start going, and that's, you know, they go and then they die and then they don't go anymore. And that, you know, the people that are coming to it aged, you know, in their 40s or 50s are in exactly the same number as the people that are leaving. And there is an element of a youth audience as well. And, I mean, you know, a lot of our subscribers and patrons bring along their kids from time to time too. I mean, I think what is more interesting is diversifying the audience. And, you know, we've you know, made some forays into that, especially with the Così Fan Tutte last year, with some work around social media and, you know, doing some Twittering and a separate sort of website and this Aussie Così pitch, which had some success. But, yeah, it's also going to be, I mean, the other way of developing this more diverse audience is just doing different things. You know, if Opera Australia puts on, or when we put on My Fair Lady, we get a lot of different people to come along. And
the people that go to My Fair Lady and enjoy it, do you think they then might come back and see a more serious opera?
Some, but the crossover isn't much. You know, people will go to what they go and see, and yes, of course, you know, if, you know, we'd ideally like to take people on the journey through. We find, you know, when people want to experience opera for the first time, the thing to take them to is something popular. And My Fair Lady's a bit more on the musical front, but, you know, Madame Butterfly and Tosca and Traviata are the works to start with, and, you know, you develop a taste and an understanding for it, and then, you know, we hope people progress into, you know, some of the more challenging repertoire. Mm.
You've mentioned the cost of putting opera on. Are you able to tell us in broad terms about the box office for the recent Melbourne Spring season, which, as you mentioned, consisted of Mozart's Aussie Così, Verdi's Aida, and André Previn's Streetcar Named Desire?
Look, it's no secret that it was a very tough year for the company last year. We made, you know, far less than the target for our Sydney summer box office during the, you know, the sort of peak of the GFC. And autumn wasn't too crash hot for us either in Melbourne. Then things started to pick up in winter in Sydney, and then the spring season, we just got there to our target. Aida was the backbone of it. It was this fabulous new Graham Murphy production. The company hadn't done it for many, many years, and it really captured the audience's attention. And, you know, Così was a little under, but it was
in both Sydney and Melbourne.
But I think, you know, it's a bold new production, and,
Not everyone liked it.
Not everyone liked it, but it really...
But some did.
...divided people, a little bit like Tosca's doing now, which I hope it does in Melbourne. You know, it sort of it got people talking and it really, you know, you scrunch an opera up a bit and recast it. I mean, not casting-wise, but, you know, reopen the bit of paper and it polarises people. You know, you get people that are... You know, will love Cosy no matter what because of the music, and then there are people that, you know, maybe their love is more bound in their memory of a more traditional production, and when they don't get that, you know, the music gets pushed to one side, no matter how good it might be. So,
what about the box office for Streetcar here in Melbourne?
It exceeded our expectations. I think we did about 90% on Streetcar, which
That's
is just
excellent.
Phenomenal for. The 20th century work.
You're on The Fall and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and we just heard the first part of my interview with Alex Budd. Now, Alex, if you're listening, I have cut you into two pieces, and we'll hear the rest of that interview on next week's program. I went along to see tenor David Rogers Smith on Friday night at the Guildford Lane Gallery, a great show with Mark Jones, Melissa Langton, and a string quartet. The season has finished, but David will be releasing a CD later in the year, so watch out for that one. Now, before Christmas, I recorded an interview with Peter Birch, Music Aviva's Victorian concert manager and the opera reviewer here in Melbourne for The Australian. If you missed that interview, it's available as a podcast on our blog site, which is joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. And I'd like to say hello to Ozmouse. Now, Ozmouse, I do hope you're sitting down and not drinking coffee. Thank you for your feedback about the interview with Peter Birch. I certainly enjoyed it and had a lot of fun. And thank you also for saying that Dan Vo has the sexiest voice on Joy. Dan, thanks you. Now, during the interview with Peter Birch, we talked about Emma Matthews and her CD Emma Matthews in Monte Carlo. And Peter mentioned that his favourite track from the CD is by the Melbourne-based composer Calvin Bowman. Here is Emma Matthews with Now Touch the Air Softly, music by Calvin Bowman. You're on The Fool and the Opera. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and we just heard Emma Matthews with Now Touch the Air Softly, music by local composer Calvin Bowman. And that track was for my very good friends Andrew and Janice, who phoned in to Jerry earlier and said what a good job I'm doing. So thank you, Andrew and Janice, and I hope you're enjoying the show. Now, today's final track comes from a work which Victorian Opera will be presenting next month, Hector Berlioz's The Damnation of Faust. Now, according to Hugh MacDonald in his notes for the Georg Solti recording, The Damnation of Faust is not an opera. It's a dramatic legend which allows the composer to overlap fantasy and realism in a way which opera cannot allow. Let's hear the Part 3 finale of Berlioz's The Damnation of Faust. You're on The Fool and the Opera. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and we just heard José Van Damme as Mephistopheles, mezzo-soprano Frederica von Stade as Margarita, and tenor Kenneth Riegel as Faust from a 1981 Georg Solti recording of Hector Berlioz's The Damnation of Faust. Now, I do have one little moment left, so I thought I might play a bit of a snippet from Peter Gabriel's version of Summertime, which is also on that Larry Adler CD from which I played the Sinead O'Connor at the beginning of the show. Let's have a listen to Peter Gabriel with Summertime from George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess.
Till that morning, there's nothing can harm you. With Daddy and Mommy standing by.
You are on The Fall and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that's all the time we've got this week. David is standing by. I can see him in the other studio to present Bent Notes. I'll be back next week with the rest of the interview with Alex Budd. So, as George Gershwin might say, we'll see you next time. Same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel. This has been The Fool and the Opera.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert. Thanks to the support of Joy sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.